It's the Ray Garcia Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yes, it is. Good afternoon on this Monday afternoon. How are you? 51551 for your texts. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. There were definitely more people out and about over the weekend. Anecdotally, isn't it mad that they're monitoring our movement through our mobile phones, our smartphones? So the government are in cahoots. Well, that's probably not the right word, but the government are getting information from Apple and other people, and they know that there are more people on the move. They don't know it's you or me. They just know that there are people with phones in their pockets moving around more. Yeah, it is Big Brother world we're living in. 515, I'm on ray@rte.ie. Loads of emails to ray@rte.ie over the weekend. Keep them coming in. Whatever's on your mind, whatever you're organising, whatever you're doing, whatever you're baking, whatever you're cooking, whatever you're singing, let us know about it. ray@rte.ie. My name is Nigel Keane. And my partner, Cathy Ballow, or could be Ballock, B-A-L-O-G-H, took it upon herself last week to organise a bingo game for the residents of William Pierce Terrace, Castledermot, County Kildare. Many of the residents here loved their game of bingo and travelled to Athy, Carlow, Boughton, Lass and Tullow to play their bingo a couple of times a week. But since the restrictions on movement, unfortunately, they can't go. The game last Thursday was a huge success, with residents sitting in their gardens and Cathy calling the numbers from the street. Sweets and biscuits were purchased as prizes and everyone enjoyed themselves. Second bingo game is organised for next Thursday, 30th of April. So if you're around William Pierce Terrace, Castledermot, well, if it's within 2 kilometres of where you live. Local shops are now donating prizes for the game and all are looking forward to it. That's Nigel King. We might talk to Cathy on Thursday. Keith O'Brien is doing something as well. He's in the O'Rahilly House Flats in Ringsend. Keith is climbing Mount Everest. How's he doing that now? It can't be within 2 kilometres of the O'Rahilly house. Well, he's doing it sort of. He's going up and down the stairwell in the flats 880 times over 6 days for Pieta House, Darkness into Light. He started this morning at 10:30. Well done, Keith. That's going to be tough on you. I hope you've done a bit of training. He has feet of light and the need to be encouraged to keep going to help people struggling with mental health. That's Keith O'Brien. And I'm sure if you put Keith O'Brien in and O'Rahilly House Flats and Rings End, you'll see an opportunity to donate money there to Pieta House. That's a great idea, isn't it? And that's similar. We spoke to Michael Harkin a few weeks ago. Remember, he was the man who organised the bingo first in the Cannon Moon Garden Flats in Ringsend. Then they did karaoke, and I see over the weekend they organised a big mass dance. They put Wakefield out on the PA system, and 200 people socially distanced danced on Saturday night. That's great crack. That was organised by Michael's daughter Rebecca Larkin and Anika Hopkins. And Monday, of course, back to school this morning. It's difficult, isn't it, to demark the days. Sunday goes into Monday, Monday goes into Tuesday. But of course, school, you had to register this morning and there were various Zoom and Microsoft Team or whatever you're having yourself. And we got an email in from Caroline. She says, could you please give a big shout out to Mrs. Farrell's third class from St. Canice's Co-Ed Kilkenny, County Kilkenny. They are a delightful in block capitals class of 29 boys and girls. We now communicate online. I send them work every week and the odd maths video from my kitchen, and many children have sent photos back via a new technology we're using called Padlet. Didn't know that. I'd have to investigate that. You wouldn't believe how they seem to have stretched over the last 6 weeks. The photos show that they are doing amazing things like learning to paint garden furniture, take judo lessons on Zoom, and one boy has a new hobby, which is keeping hens. I miss all the boys and girls very much. We worked very hard this year and this last term was meant to be the time when we could do some of the really nice things, like go on school tours or just go out to play rounders on a whim if it was sunny. But it's not to be. Many of the parents are working from home, which can be tricky. I have 4 boys myself and it's certainly easier to teach 29 boys and girls in the structured setting of the classroom than to homeschool at times. Some parents are working on the front line and I would like to send a huge shout out to them, as well as my sincere thanks. Listen to the show every day and enjoy your playlist on your website. Keep up the good work, says Caroline Farrell. Well, right back at you, Caroline. Keep up the good work and all the third class in St. Canice's Co-Ed in Kilkenny. Hello to all of you. Sounds like you're doing amazing stuff. And I'd forgotten about that. The school tour, they're going to be, all of them are cancelled. I remember when we went to Donnelly's Hollow. A total of 3.5 miles from Kildare Town. That was our school tour. 12 was in a minibus up to Donnelly's Hollow. Retraced the tracks of Dan Donnelly. His footsteps are still there, according to legend. Now, Siobhan Larkin has been on as well to ray@rte.ie. I recently have had involvement with a funeral and realised how vital undertakers are in this COVID-19 crisis. I also realised that when various groups are acknowledged for the work, that this group never get a mention. As a group, they have to deal with people in the most difficult of times of their lives when they have to face the death of a dearly loved one. They're having to advise people in rapidly changing circumstances. They're a group that remain in the background and treat people with the utmost compassion. Just could you highlight this, please, the importance of this group and the toll that this present crisis must be taking on them and their families. Currigans and Sons are the group that we use and we appreciate their care. That's Siobhan Larkin, who's obviously lost someone recently. So commiserations to you, Siobhan. And yeah, you're right. Undertakers do a huge job, particularly now in the current environment where people, only 20 people can go, and then there's social distancing and people aren't getting a chance to say goodbye to the loved ones before they die. We spoke to Dave McGowan, actually, a few weeks ago. He's a funeral director up the northwest of the country. So we say thank you to all the funeral directors around the country. And Anne says thank you to everybody working in RTE on radio and television, informing and entertaining, she says. Then she goes on to say, my reason for writing is to draw people's attention to something that I think would be helpful to us all when we're out and about exercising. I myself am really fortunate that I live very close to the Royal Canal just outside Maynooth, where I can walk and cycle as part of my daily exercise routine. I meet lots of people, all keeping their social distance, walking, cycling, walking their dogs, jogging, etc. And by and large, it all works out most of the time, because we're all in this together, aren't we, Anne? Most of us are, anyway. However, I would like to give a shout out to cyclists. Please, please, please ring your bells to alert people when they're approaching, especially from behind. And if they don't have a bell to ring, maybe just call out a gentle warning that they're coming through. Thank you in advance for bringing people's attention to this. Stay safe and well, Anne. Jenny and I are having this ongoing discussion about how people are reacting to this and what it says about their personalities and their attitude to life. And the people who are coming out the worst, in our estimation, are the people who stay too abreast when you're approaching them. So when we go out walking as a family, all the kids know, well, our two children, Tom and Kate, know that when we're approaching somebody that we get into single file. And that seems like the right thing to do. However, over the weekend, and I met loads of these families, 3-4 abreast walking up to you. And you think, oh, they're going to go single breast at any moment now. This is, yeah, of course, they can see me coming. And they're going to go, just because social distancing 2 metres apart doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. Now, I don't know what's going on in their heads. Still say hello and they're smiling and all that sort of thing. So, don't know what's going on in their heads at all. 51551ray@rte.ie. I just saw this is going to fuel the walker runner debate more. There's an article in the Irish Times today, was put up at 6 o'clock this morning. They've done research and they show now that runners create a slipstream and that the droplets that they give off, and I'm talking about myself now, can go as far as 9 metres. That thing goes. The only thing is, though, that it's directly behind them, directly behind them. So if you were to the side of them, you shouldn't be affected in any way, shape or form. Anyway, we all have to be aware of other people. If you're running, I would suggest what I do, just slow down when you're passing somebody, maybe turn your face away from them, all of that. Just think about it. Just think about it. And treat yourself as a pariah. Pretend that you have it, even if you haven't got it. And then behave accordingly. Isn't that what they're telling us to do? Now, loads of requests coming in and we'll get to those. Also today we have the first quarterfinal tie in the quarterfinals. Yes, that'd be a quarterfinal tie. The quarterfinals of the All-Ireland Quiz. So we have to do the draw. So the quarterfinals means how many? There are only 8 left. Is that it? 8 left? Yeah, 8 teams left, 8 counties left. So let's get this draw done then. Here we go. So today at 4 o'clock we will be meeting once again Waterford. And Waterford will be taking on Kildare. It's Kildare Waterford. So that's Munster versus Leinster. Then tomorrow, Donegal will be taking on, let's go for it, Leitrim, northwest there. And then on Wednesday, it will be Cork versus, there we go, Antrim. And finally then on Friday, in the final quarter-final tie in the All-Ireland quiz, Cavan will be answering questions against Longford. So there you go. Waterford, Kildare, Cork, Antrim, Leitrim, Donegal, and Longford, Cavan. That's the draw for the quarterfinals of the All-Ireland quiz. And by the end of next week, we will have an All-Ireland quiz champion, which is very exciting. Very exciting as well is that Normal People, the TV adaptation of Sally Rooney's much acclaimed bestseller of the same name, is hitting our screens tomorrow evening. Tomorrow evening, we're going to be talking to the star, who we've spoken to before, Paul Mescal, and the director, Larry Abramson, tomorrow. The good news for them is that they've got a 5-star rave review in The Guardian today, because it's out on BBC Three. I'll just read you the last paragraph of the review about Normal People. It's a triumph in every way, from acting and direction to script. And if we see a better drama, certainly about adolescents taking it seriously without treating it indulgently this year, I'd be very surprised. It's a beautiful, hugely beautiful thing. That's Lucy Mangan's review of Normal People. And as I say, we'll be speaking to the star, Paul Mescal, and the director, Lenny Abramson, tomorrow on the show. Looking forward to that. 5 on 5 5 on radio.rt.ie. Just to say, I completed 3,000 press-up challenge earlier for the Laura Lane Hospice. Thanks for the challenge of 3K. Cheers. That's Ger Ferris in Clondalkin. Well done, Ger. I'm still doing it. What day is today? Well, I think I've, what is it, 2,600? 2,600 done, I think. That's it. 4 more days to go. So 400 more press-ups to do in the 3,000 press-up challenge for Laura Lynn. And we have the link if you want to donate. Laura Lynn, like most charities at the moment, they're suffering because they've had to call off events. So they need your help now more so than ever. So if you want to support Laura Lynn, you can go onto our website or go onto their website, Laura Lynn. Click on donate and give as much as you can afford. Well done, Ger. My daughter Mary, or Maura Og McCarty, who lives in Clun Ord in Cove, was 59 yesterday, Sunday, April 26th. She'll be most thankful if you send her love and best wishes from me and all the family. She's a great fan of Elvis Presley. I don't think we have any Elvis in the box today. That's from Donald McCarty on Cove in Cundy and Corky. So thanks for that. And happy birthday, Mary Maura. That's exactly the way it's written. And please give a shout out to the Devaney boys, Sean 14, Cahar 15 and Niall 17, and Dad in Ballybuffet in County Donegal. They're boxing 100 rounds for charity. Whoa, that's a tough one. Good luck with that, lads. And a request for Mary-Kate Carr, who lives in Mallinmore, Glencolm Kill, County Donegal. And today's her 21st. And that's from Aunt Evelyn in Ballybuffet. And finally, can you send happy birthday wishes to a special brother, Seamus Mallon from Bray? There's a famous name. Lots of love from Maura, Breda and Christine. Lots of love there. So keep them coming in. 5 on 5 5 1 ray at rte.ie. Now, this performance stopped me in my tracks on Friday night. Dermot Kennedy was on and he did 3 songs, and they raised over $250,000 for the Capuchin work in Dublin, the Capuchin Brothers. And he sang this Van Morrison song, which is a brilliant rendition of a brilliant song. So I thought I'd play it for you again. 5 on 5 5 on radio.rte. Good afternoon. That's nice, isn't it? Dermot Kennedy, his version of Van Morrison's Days Like This from The Late Late Show on Friday night. Lovely version of a lovely song. It's my partner's birthday today. She's a big fan of the show. I'd be obliged if you could wish her a happy birthday. She's 46. Maybe don't mention her age too late. Why do you look? I do apologise. That's the way it's written. She's 46 today. Maybe don't mention her age. She's from Clondalkin, now living in Donegal. Hello from Dad Tony, son Sean, sisters Anita and Pamela, and partner Fergal. So happy birthday. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Adele, and sorry that I told the nation what age you are today. apologies. Do you remember the Sambos on the school tours, the home of boiled eggs or Hazlitt and roasting hot bottles of orange Cadet? Stephen. My abiding memory of school tours has been on a boat somewhere, probably on the Shannon, and getting violently sick over the side. That's apart from Donnelly's Hollow. That's my abiding memory. Or maybe going into a shop in Kilkenny and buying some trinket to bring home. Can you put out there the danger in parents allowing their children to cycle at a fast pace on paths and estates? When I opened my gate the other day, a young child sped past the gate. I never saw him. And if he had hit me, I would have been badly injured, says Sarah. So there. Just think. What's the number to text in the children announcing the show? My little lad listens with me in Chicago every day. Would love our family and friends in Maynooth to hear him. Ali wants to know. So he wants to be like this.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Wash your hands.
That's little Dermot there. Thanks, Dermot, age 6. 087-187-9101. So you can leave a voice note on that. That's our WhatsApp number, 087-187-9101. We'd look forward to hearing more. Do you want to hear another one just for a bit of crack? Yeah, let's go with little Aveen, age 5.
It does show on RTE Radio 1.
Or 51551 for your text. Now, we've spoken to Dr. Catherine Mannix before. Her career was as a palliative care physician, and she wrote a brilliant book back in 2017 called With the End in Mind, encouraging people to think about death and sharing the story of many of the thousands of deaths she had witnessed in her career. Catherine is back on the line. How are you doing, Catherine?
Hi, nice to talk to you. I'm fine, thanks. How are you doing?
Good. You're back on the line and you're back at work.
I'm kind of back at work, right. Yes. I'm not patient facing because I'm old enough to be in one of those risk groups. But I've gone back as in a kind of staff support and wise old owl capacity. Right. And it's lovely to see all those colleagues again.
Yeah. So we had two long chats about death when we spoke before, and you shared your wisdom. And now we're in a situation where the dying process, if you want to call it that, has changed beyond recognition. So what do you think? What was your initial reaction when you found out that people were dying without loved ones by their side?
It's just extraordinary, isn't it? It's a really, really extraordinary time and heartbreaking for everybody who's involved, because we're not great, are we, at talking about those things that are really important. And we often do leave it until the deathbed to say those really important things. And now that chance is being removed. So we have this picture of our loved ones being either completely alone or supported by perhaps one or two people who've been allowed to visit on compassionate grounds. But actually, now that I've been able to see what's happening back in the hospitals, people are not alone. And I think that's really important for your listeners to hear, that staff are working their socks off to be there, to be around the bedside, to be able to help people make telephone calls and video calls, read letters that people have brought in, save messages. I've heard of hospitals that are keeping patient diaries so that if the person survives, and let's remember that most people do survive, then they've got a record of that odd time that they spent in hospital. But if they don't survive, there's that record for their families of what happened on a day-by-day and hour-by-hour basis to help them make sense of the story.
In reading your book, and I flicked through it again this morning, story after story recounts how, loved ones were by the bedside, and how important that was for the dying and the loved ones. And now that that's been taken from people, how do you think it's affecting the people who know they're facing death?
Well, I think it's just terribly difficult, isn't it? And there are people who are making the decision not to go to hospital because they fear dying without, their life partner of the last 50 years beside them more than they fear dying itself. So there are some people who are making the decision that, if I can't remain with the people who are most precious to me, then I'm prepared to stay at home and take that risk. And of course, that's the whole different set of risks. And there are some people who are saying, no, I'll go into hospital because that's what reduces the risk of the virus transmitting to other people that I love. So there isn't a right answer here. It's just, it's frightening and it's sad. And it makes us being a little bit more ready than we have been used to being, very much more important.
Yes, and that's what you talk about in your book. It's having the conversation about death, because oftentimes people don't have that, and they leave things unsaid. So, as a society, and this is universal, isn't it? It's global.
Yeah, this pattern is repeating itself all over the world, wherever the virus is being rapidly transmitted. And it's really interesting, you know, looking at what different countries have done and how they've managed to keep numbers down in different ways by different social practices. But at the end of the day, people are dying from this, and it's an infectious disease where we're trying to protect the rest of their family and also the staff in hospitals or residential care homes who have to carry on looking after other people's relatives as well. So it's a really difficult thing. But I guess now that we've seen it, one of the things that's been really beneficial for us in the United Kingdom and in the Republic of Ireland is that we are behind the curve of some other places in the world. So we've seen what happened in China. We've then learnt from the experiences in Italy and in Spain. So we've been able to do some healthcare preparation of clearing our hospitals, getting intensive care ready, giving staff new roles. But as societies, I think there are things that we can do as well. So I guess most people who have family that live far away, you know, relatives in Australia or around the Far East or, you know, across the Atlantic, already are a little bit better prepared than those of us who are used to being able to pop around the corner and see our families. But we can teach our vulnerable relatives and our older people to use electronic devices. So families are setting up chat groups, WhatsApp, Messenger, Skype, Zoom. You know, there's lots of different choices, but it's really important to help particularly our older relatives who sometimes find it harder to learn new stuff. Just choose one of those and stick to that one, and let's start using it. Let's start calling them. Let's start practicing. And that's a new way that we will communicate with each other for the rest of their lives. And let's hope that their lives are not limited during this pandemic. But if they are taken into hospital, they already know how to call us, how to see us, how to chat to us.
And that's important. And we've spoken a lot on the programme about how people are communicating, and people who never thought they'd Zoom or Skype or FaceTime are doing it, which is great. When we spoke before, we spoke about how we do death in this country, and that has been taken away from us as well. So over 1,000 people have died in this country. What would you say from your experience as a palliative care physician to those families who haven't been allowed to sort of witness the death of their loved one or grieve in the way that they thought they would?
It's so very hard, isn't it? It's really, really difficult. I think one of the things that perhaps might help people is what we don't know, we imagine. And you and I have talked about this before, that we imagine is usually much more awful than what actually happens to people. And I know that when I spoke to you last October, we talked about that process of dying that leads people to become progressively less conscious until they are completely unconscious. And this illness isn't different from that. It's faster once the process of unconsciousness starts to happen than dying from long-term lung disease or from cancer or something like that. So we know that from being well to being unconscious to being dead, if they're going to die within a couple of 3 weeks, don't they? Whereas usually we're used to a longer illness than that. But at that time that people are reaching the very last moments and last hours of their lives, they are usually dipping in and out of unconsciousness until they're fully unconscious. So at that point, they don't know who is and who isn't around them. And the window of opportunity for us to be their companions is earlier than that. And at that point, staff are still helping them to have telephone calls. Sometimes they won't feel strong enough to be able to talk back, just as when we're sitting around a bed with a beloved person who's dying, very often we're chatting around the bed and we can watch from time to time that they might smile or they might nod, but they don't say very much. So that's the point at which nurses and volunteers in hospitals are helping families to make phone calls. Or I heard a story last week of a family who got the grandchildren to sing a song down the phone, and the nurse put the phone on the pillow beside the grandparents' ear so that they could hear those beloved voices. So people are getting very, very creative about helping families to connect. And then in our bereavement, what we need to be able to do is tell the story. And that's what we did with Waking, didn't we? We talked about their life story, yes. But we also talked about their death story. And that last chapter, we're missing details from. So we need to encourage people to remember the phone calls, take screenshots during their phone calls that help them to be able to piece together the jigsaw of that last few days of somebody's life when we weren't able to be with them, but also to remember all of the other days and months and years and decades when we were able to be with them, and to celebrate who they were for us, and not just be so racked by that the loss of those last hours that we forget that we've had a whole lifetime together.
Mm. And the fact that only 20 people can go to a funeral now, a lot of people would have much more than 20 people who would want to arrive and offer their condolences to the family and friends, and that's been taken from people as well, and that must be difficult. We had Sister Helen Culhane on last week, who deals with grief and children, and she was saying, and it's a bit of what you're saying as well, that it's, you know, in explaining to children about the funeral, it's a good idea to take a picture of the hearse and a picture of thing that might sound a little bit crass, but it works, because as you say, you have to tell the story, don't you, of death.
Yeah, and it's so important to be able to do that and to have those photographs. And, you know, sometimes that sounds like a macabre thing to do, but actually it's a really loving thing, isn't it? What we're trying to do is give children something real to hold on to, because otherwise they will come across deaths that aren't real deaths in fairy stories, you know, where you sleep for 100 years until you get kissed and then you wake up again, or you know, you're kept, but you know, you've been taken away from your family by dragons and robbers and pirates and all these fantastical things that children believe in. So we have to be able to give them a truth that they can look at and hold and see is real. And part of that truth is that the other grown-ups will be sad. And being sad is okay, because it's part of loving somebody. And if they feel sad, that they have permission to be sad too.
Mm.
So we're modelling for them how to deal with death, just as we model for them how to deal with life.
And you say that you're acting as sort of a wise owl and you're in a consultancy basis. But it must be very tough on frontline workers. Because the scale of death is bigger than it normally would be.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got intensive care units who pride themselves on how low their death rate is, now seeing their death rate change completely because of the way this illness works. And so instead of having maybe a death or several a week, they're having a death or several a day in some places.
Right.
And that's a huge change for them.
Yeah.
We've got wards of people who are being, I have to say, beautifully looked after, really beautifully looked after, many of whom will get better, but some of whom won't. And in the early phases of being in hospital, it's very, very difficult to know which of those will turn out to be the survivors and which of those won't turn out to survive. But during all of that time, managing their symptoms is really important. This illness makes people very breathless. And we've got great drugs for managing breathlessness. We've got very good at that over the last, you know, 20, 30 years of palliative care. So we can give people treatments that damp down the breathlessness very well indeed. And people can have those drugs, whether they're in hospital or at home. But the thing that has struck me the most being back in the hospital is the quiet. That because we haven't got visitors wandering around the corridors, and we've got staff reluctant to come out of their clinical areas because it's really complicated to take all the gear off to leave and then put all the gear back on again to go back in. Everywhere is very, very quiet. And of course, breathless people don't talk very much. So the wards themselves are quite quiet because people are asleep, they're relaxing, they're saving their energy, and then they're having these bursts of energy where they have these phone calls with their families, but the rest of the time people are fairly quiet. So it's a very, very different place from the busy hospitals that we're all used to being in.
It's eerie. It sounds very eerie.
It is. It's very, very strange.
Mm. And you provided a service over those years, and for want of a better word, the nicety of a palliative care physician talking to families and talking to the dying person, is that service still there?
Oh, it's absolutely still there, and they've never been so welcome. You know, for a long time, when I first started in palliative care, people weren't really sure whether they were our friends or not, whether they trusted us or not. And, you know, over the last, 20 years of my practice, we went from, we're not really sure what you're about, to, oh, thank God you're here.
Mm.
And now my colleagues in palliative care are describing walking onto wards and being received with open arms, because actually there's a list of questions to ask. This person's breathlessness isn't responding as well as we'd like. Have you got any tricks to add? We're trying to deal with a difficult cough for this person here. We're wondering about whether there's a way of settling this person who's getting a little bit anxious and agitated but wants to be awake for a phone call in a couple of hours' time. You know, have you got any special recipes for that? With somebody here who's just incredibly sad, and do you have time to just sit and maybe offer some listening and some time for that? Because palliative care isn't just the physical symptoms, of course, it's
the mental,
the emotional and spiritual distress as well. So, yes, the palliative care team is in all places, will be very, very busy, but also, as always, very happy to chat through patients that you're looking after by telephone, or pop into the ward and have a word with you to see what they can add to what you're already doing. We don't need to see every person who has palliative care needs. You know, we've been training up people in primary care and in hospital for 30 years. It's palliative care that's known by community nurses or ward nurses or hospital doctors, GPs, is much, much better now than it was maybe 30 years ago. But we can add to what they're doing, and they're doing a fantastic
amazing job. What do you think the effect is on the general population of tuning into the news every night and death becoming a number? You know, what's the number tonight?
Do you know what that really? That's a really great question. That really struck me early on. That, you know, we used to be nations that didn't discuss death until after death had happened. Ireland was very good at doing after death. But, you know, again, 6 months ago, you and I were discussing whether we were very good at doing the approach
to death.
Yeah. But suddenly death was on the news all the time, but it was death as data. It wasn't death as people. It wasn't death as bereavement and sadness, was it? It was just numbers.
Statistics.
And what's starting to happen now is that we're starting to hear the stories behind those numbers. And I think that once we start to hear the stories, then we start to be able to learn things, and we can be better prepared in our families for the experience of those families who've experienced this sadness before us. And I know it can sound very hard for people who are recently bereaved if I start looking for positives, and I don't want to be Pollyanna about it, but I do see some really important changes going on as a consequence of this. Lots of things have been stopped. We can't get together, we can't have our wakes, we can't have our funerals, but social connection in communities has really taken off, hasn't it, in different ways. And we're seeing acts of kindness and people sticking leaflets through each other's doors to say, do you want me to collect your prescriptions, do you need your newspaper delivered? My parents' next door neighbour, who they've known to chat to over the fence for a long time, now is regularly doing their shopping for them, which is absolutely wonderful. We've got people talking about dying, you know, actually talking about dying and what have been the happinesses in their life and what are the things that they want to celebrate. People being really creative in connecting with each other. And something that I think is really important that we need to grasp this is that while our schools are still deliberating about when they will go back, we have teachers who are working part-time because they're taking it in turns to run classes for the children who need to be in school because their parents are essential workers of a variety of kinds. But when schools go back, every school will have children in it who are newly bereaved. And a lot of schools will have to explain to children that members of staff have died during this pandemic. So we've got this opportunity for teachers to learn how to be alongside grieving children of different ages, how to talk about it, how to get it into our curriculum. Mm. But I think maybe the most important thing to come out of this is if we love people, if we appreciate them, the time to tell them is now. And something that I've been sharing on social media is in my book, you probably remember towards the back, there's a couple of pages that are printed sideways.
A letter, yes, a letter. Yeah.
And that's printed sideways so you can stick it on a photocopier, and when you print it out, it's one A4 page the
right
way.
Tell us about that, Catherine.
So this is a letter that enables people to say those important things, and the important things that everybody wants to say are about what you've meant to me, what I want to thank you for, what I'm sorry about, what I want you to know isn't a grudge for me, that I forgive you for, and how much I love you. And this letter is a kind of template that says those things, and then, you know, what I wish for your future would be, and I thank you for being an important part of my life. And when I put it in the book, I thought, you know, maybe just one or two people might use this. But since I stuck it out on social media, I've had this huge response from people saying, this was such a help to us. We used this in our family. Nurses saying, I've used this as a vehicle for communications for families towards the end of somebody's life. Or I've used this the other way round.
Yes.
And got families to tell the person how much they meant to them.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's been absolutely extraordinary. But I have copyright for that, so I'm allowed to give it away. Pleasure to do that. So I checked
that
out
up
with the publishers that RTE can have that.
Great. Oh, you're very good.
Like
you're very good.
That. Because anything that just makes this a little bit less worse is a little bit better, isn't it?
Mm, yeah. And it's, you know, it's very difficult. It's death every day, and obviously hugely difficult for somebody who's lost a loved one. But you would wonder what long-term effect it's going to have on everybody. I hope that we don't become immune to, you know, the death and dying, you know, and talking about it, that it becomes a statistic. That's not going to happen, but it is going to have some long-term effect. I don't know what that is, and it remains to be seen what it will be, but it will have an effect. With the end in mind is your brilliant book. I'll remind people about that again. And thank you so much for taking some time out again to talk to us, Dr. Catherine Mannix, who's a retired palliative care physician who's now back consulting in the NHS in the UK. Catherine, thank you. Mind yourself and stay safe.
And you, Ray. Thanks ever so much.
Thank you. Bye now. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Kathleen was on to says, my mum lost her partner on the 15th of April. Last night, we listened to the names on the Ireland Remembers broadcast. Her partner's name was mentioned. Although my family is separated due to restrictions, for those 5 minutes, we are united as a family in sadness. Ireland Remembers is a very dignified, reverent way to remember all our loved ones who have passed. And that's a service, is it, that RTE are providing at the moment? And I was talking to somebody involved in it, and they're saying that families are now asking their funeral directors how they can get on. And it's all up there on the RTE website, Ireland Remembers. And there's two broadcasts at the weekend, and there's a website as well. So there's loads there, and it seems to be working for people. Anything that helps. Would you mention a very special lady who has a very special birthday today? Her name is Marcella Kelly, being pampered in the garden from her five siblings, Marie in Athlone, Terry in Norwich, Pat in Banagher, Barry in Kilbride and Colette in Galway. And that's happy birthday to you, Marcella Kelly. I used to know Marcella Kelly. Jackie says, I still have some of the little gifts that my two daughters brought home from school tours. A matchbox covered in tweed. Everybody should have one of those. A tiny jar of marmalade, the contents eaten, of course, many key rings and giant pencils. My abiding memory of my own school tour in the 70s was to Kilkenny, eating sausages and chips. in Keitler's Inn, a medieval restaurant that had a resident ghost making the whole thing terrifying. Then loads of us vomiting on the bus on the way back to Newbridge. That's Jackie. Is that because of the ghosts or because of the motion on the bus and the sausages and chips? My name is Abby. Can you please say hello to all the Murphys, O'Leary's, Manns and Ferns in Drumtariff, County Cork? Drumtariff. I've never heard of Drumtariff before. We miss not being able to see them. Love from all the Galway cousins. And a request to my best friend from school days. It's a really big birthday, so I know she's listening. Her name is Venetia Rothwell from Ennis and County Clare. Sorry, no party this year, but we'll make up for it. From Val, hugs and kisses there. And Donald Cadwell, 40 today in Dublin 24. Greetings from Mum and Dad, Bill and Mary, locked down in Alicante in Spain. Nice place to be knocked down. Now, lots of people are using their free time at the moment to get into running. Or at least thinking about getting into running. So we asked our resident running coach, Mary Jennings, to join us for a chat. Mary got us all in shape for Run With Ray last year. Sorry, we were planning to do that again, but it won't happen this year for obvious reasons. She's also the author of Get Running and the founder of Forget the Gym. How you doing, Mary?
Hi, Ray. Nice to chat again.
Good to talk to you. How are things with you and family?
Yeah, doing fine. We're getting used to each other and all that. So yeah, we're all at home full time, staying local and staying safe, thank God, so far.
There's a letter to the Irish Times today, a quote pertinent to the Times from poet Edna St. Vincent Millay. The longest absence is less perilous to love than the terrible trials of incessant proximity.
So well, that's right.
Yeah,
we all need a break from each other.
we do. And what better way to get a break than go out running?
Well, exactly.
So have you noticed on your run that there are a lot more people out?
I haven't actually, to be honest. I've seen. Well, maybe I'm. I don't know. Maybe I'm not running the right places, or maybe I am running in the right places. I think. You mean in the last week or so?
Because I've noticed on my route now, there's loads and loads more people new to the route.
I don't know. I suppose what I try to do personally is I try to get off the roads totally, and I'm running through fields and things like that. We've parked close to us. There's a lot of wild fields, so I'm becoming much more used to running on grass now. I'm trying to keep away from the path. Mainly, you know, just I think it's easier on everyone. There's no point returning home more stressed out from a run, trying to avoid people and stressing out other people. Because, you know, well, as you mentioned there earlier, people are on edge all the time.
They are, and it's good advice if you can run in a place where you're not likely to meet other people.
Yeah, you have the opportunity, the time, you know, to be able to go at a time when it's quieter, and I think also actually the willingness to stop in the middle of a run and move into a ditch or a gateway or something and not feel that your run has to be, you know, by the clock and under time pressure and things like that. There's a lot of pressure on everyone at the moment, and, you know, for running to be something that can kind of relieve that pressure rather than add to it would be a great bonus.
Great bonus. So for people now who have time in their hands and this is on their bucket list, they've been putting it off and putting it off, and eventually now they're going, I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it, I'm going to go out running. What's your advice to them?
Two words of advice is slow down in every sense of the word. Both the enthusiasm and the speed and the I suppose the intention. I mean, people go out and think they're going to be able to run. They think, oh yeah, 2K. You know, that's the big number around these days. I'll run my 2K or to the 2K limit and back. And I think people put a lot of expectations on a number that's just picked out of the air. You have to work out from where you are right now. If you're a brand new runner, I'd be saying, you know, walk your distance first, get comfortable over your walking distance, and then add in little elements of running along the way. So a minute or two here where you have a clear path, and build it up slowly. I'm really a big fan, as you know, from last year of building in an 8-week training plan and not trying to reach, in 8 weeks' time, we're still going to be needing goals and plans to keep us on the straight and narrow. So why not say now for you know, from now up till even the June bank holiday, you could get yourself moving from where you are now up to somewhere near 5K or certainly an hour a day or three quarters of an hour a day to get out and have time for yourself.
And there's great plans in your Get Running book for people who can't get their hands on it. What's your favourite couch to 5K, or do you have one? Or
I suppose my own, right?
Your own, yes.
I don't know.
Where can people access that?
I actually have a free video-based one I did with the Irish Times a few years ago, and it's still there and available.
Great.
It's an 8-week plan, free with the Irish Times. It's called Get Running, and the only downside is you have to listen to me telling you what to do.
Oh, that's...
It's little videos, but what I've done in that is built in running technique and injury prevention and all the little elements drip-fed along the way. So it's the same process as my 8-week running classes would be, if you know what I mean. Yes, so it's moved online. That's totally free to everyone, and that's there. So it, and there are loads of apps and things like that as well. I suppose at the moment, the one thing I'm kind of conscious of is people running with headphones on, and I'd really love people to get away from that, just for their own environment and safety and just awareness of other people around them. To be able to run free is a nice way to do it as well. And
I'm with you on that one.
Yeah.
But like, you know, I just can't wear headphones, but I know people who can't run without headphones.
Without them, yeah.
But you're right, you need to be aware of what's going on around you.
I
now
think so. And I think
ever.
Even when if you meet and you know, I know myself, I'm a walker, I'm a runner, I'm a motorist, I'm all of those, I can see runners coming towards you. If someone is wearing headphones, you can possibly think, are they you know, concentrating what they're doing, or they're very focused on the run. Whereas if someone's not in headphones, I feel they're a little bit more accessible, or, you know, people can seem a little bit more distant when they're wearing headphones. Whether they are or not is another story, but certainly how they are perceived. And I know myself, if you are in headphones or you're listening to something, you can get distracted by it. But also the thing you definitely don't listen to when you have headphones on is your breath. And when you're starting out running, the most important thing is to listen to your breath and to run at a pace that's comfortable and relaxed. And often people turn up the music to drown out the breath, and
not,
then
not
they wonder why
idea.
They're wrecked. So slow down your pace and you know, look around and enjoy. I mean, like, we are, everything that is going on, the weather has been fabulous, and, you know, spring is in the air and all that. So it is, we are very lucky to have had this weather we've had to get out, you know, and to take a little bit of freedom for ourselves.
And getting fit is brilliant for your immune system, which we all need to be strong at the moment.
And it's fresh air, you know, not just, I know running is my thing, but, you know, there's been plenty of days in the last month or so where you just haven't felt like running. But a walk, you know, to go out for a walk for half an hour is, I think, you know, it's such, you know, adds great value. It's the fresh air as much as anything, I think, these days, whether you're walking or running or whoever you're moving. And even if you don't think you're fit or you've no intention of, you know, being a big runner or anything, it's just to commit to that time where we have the opportunity to be outside locally and to get the, you know, the vitamin D and the good feeling from the fresh air.
OK. Mary, thanks so much.
No problem at all, right?
OK, thank you very much. Thank you. And it related, I spotted this over the weekend, this was huge in the UK, and now Fiona Tallon is inviting everybody to do a 5K, donate €5 and nominate 5 more people to do it. It's all the fives. How are you doing, Fiona?
How are you, Ray? Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Yeah, so tell us about this.
Yeah, so it's just a little campaign I set up. Basically, you run 5K, you donate €5 and you nominate 5 people to do the same.
Yeah, and you were inspired by the UK. They raised loads of money over there. What do you do yourself?
So I work as a community pharmacist in Swords.
So you're a frontline worker?
Yeah.
What's the situation like in the place that you work? Because I know in our local pharmacy, it's quite scary because there's a Perspex wall. It's not just a piece of Perspex on a counter. It's the full wall. And then there's a little hatch where you go up to and the person comes up and puts your stuff there, and then they step back and then you step up and take it. It's quite a scary setup.
Yeah, so it's pretty much the same in our place. We have like 2 Perspex hatches. So people can approach the hatch, we can serve them from the hatch, and they can get their prescription medicines or whatever items they're looking for over the counter. But it's just to ensure safety for both patients and both for ourselves, because obviously we want to continue on doing our job. So
yes.
It's just to prevent us from getting affected too.
So you're a runner yourself, and you thought, what, you do this little thing, and what, raise how much for frontline workers? What were you hoping for?
So originally the goal was just €1,000 and I was going to give it all to Bowmont, but it really just took off, and I can only thank everybody for participating in that, and my friends, especially Una, Anna, Grania and Gillian for doing their PR work, and especially as well my mom and dad, Mary and Brian. I don't think there's a person that they haven't told about this campaign, but it really just took off overnight, and social media as well just accelerated it. So it was originally started on the 11th of April, and as I said, the goal was €1,000, but by Friday the 17th we'd reached 20,000, and then by that Monday it was up to 100,000, and then it doubled again to 200,000 by the Wednesday. So it's just phenomenal, the nation's response behind it.
And where are you at now?
So I have a day off today, so I'm just at home chilling.
And you've checked in on the total, obviously. How much is
checked
it?
Checked in. So we're at 248 at the moment. So I'd love for it to get to 250.
Right. Okay. So it's just, remind people how they do it.
So basically, a lot of people have been tagged already, but if you haven't been tagged, you can get involved. So all you have to do is run your 5K, and if you pop into Google, GoFundMe, run for HSE Heroes, it pops up. So all you have to do is donate your €5 to that and then nominate five people just to continue on the trend.
Okay. And where is the money going to go exactly?
So it's going towards a total of 12 hospitals at the moment. So that's Beaumont, the Mater, St James's, Conley, Limerick University, the Mercy in Cork, Waterford, Our Ladies in Drogheda, Tala, St Vincent's, Cork University and Cavan General.
And is it ring-fenced for one particular area of the hospital or...?
So it's just depending on what the hospital needs itself. So I was talking to, there's great people who work in our hospitals and they're doing amazing work every day to fundraise. So of course they're looking for PPE and then they're looking for diagnostic machines as well. But they're also looking for simple things like tablets and phones so that patients can phone their loved ones.
Yes, yeah, we were just talking about that with Catherine Mannix. Hugely important, hugely important, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if you do this, you may be helping to buy an iPad for somebody who can communicate with their family in their dying hours, which is amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Well done, Fiona. Well done. I tagged my five people. One of them was Mary Kennedy, so I'm saying it live on air now and embarrass her into doing it.
She's no excuse now.
And who are the other? Warren, Niamh, Sue, Mary Kennedy, and who was the fifth one? I don't know who the fifth one was. Anyway, they're all embarrassed into doing it now, and it's very doable. Walk, run 5K, donate €5, and you're helping the people on the front line. Fiona Tallon, great talking to you. Mind yourself.
Thanks, Ray. Thanks for having me on the show.
Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
51551 Ray at RTE.ie. Now, just to catch up on a few things from the last hour. The DSPCA were onto us. They're appealing to people out walking their dogs in parks and green areas near ponds, rivers and along the banks of the canals to keep their dogs under control and ideally on short leads. Two DSPCA inspectors were called to an incident in Dublin where a swan had to be rescued from the water of the canal following an attack by a dog. The swan was rushed to the DSPCA rescue centre in Rathfarnham, but due to the severity of her injuries, she had to be put to sleep. A spokesperson for the DSPCA said, this is the time of the year that birds are nesting and swans and other water birds nest close to the water and their nests are vulnerable. We would ask that dog owners be aware of these areas and to keep their dogs on short leads and to try to avoid known nest sites. So we pass that on and happy to do so. And definitely agree with you about people not going in single file when passing others. Such a pity, as it would make going outside so much more pleasant and safer for all. That picture on the cover of the Irish Times today where the two Spanish children were jumping with joy, released after 6 weeks, was a great picture. I saw another picture over the weekend where some places around the country are doing, you know, the same as if you were driving. So you keep to the left. You walk on the left, so then there's a sort of a method to it and everyone knows what's going on. Can you wish Donal O'Leary from Clochdubh in County Cork a happy 45th birthday from all his work colleagues in... Depoy, is it? Depoy, Ring of Skiddy in County Cork. And happy 21st to Daniel Kern in Bruff from all his family. And we're a family of four and we're setting each other challenges. My husband set up the first. He gave us a chart of Irish birds. We have to take a photo of as many as we can see. The person who comes up with the most wins. It's great fun. We have two girls, Kira and Ellen. Say hello. That sounds like great crack. When you're sitting looking out the window at the back garden, if you're looking to have one, you might as well be doing something. And on school tours, my abiding memory of school tours is fainting in the reptile house in Dublin Zoo. Long story, but to this day, I'm still absolutely terrified of snakes. Anton Drumcondra. And then you see you probably hadn't eaten since breakfast and the smell in the reptile house. And then it's very warm as well because it has to be because they're cold-blooded creatures. So all of that. And the nerves around snakes must have got on top of you, overcome you. Poor Anto. I'm missing my lovely girls, Breda, Landy, Horgan, Sandra Burns and Suzanne Dillon and the celebrations we were meant to have for my big roundy birthday in Castle Martyr last weekend. That's Jenny Nell in Cork. She's missing you, girls. And back to school tours. My daughter Fiona, now working as a vet in Briar Hill, Vets in Galway, once went on a school tour to Killarney. The trip involved a ferry crossing the Shannon from Climber to Tarbert. I've done that. It's a lovely crossing. She saved €5 all day long to buy something on the way back. On the ferry, a shoal of dolphins passed and the kids all rushed to see them. In the excitement, Fiona let the €5 note fly away and it floated off with the dolphins out to sea. She was devastated, but it never stopped her great love of animals. She's a great vet today. From her proud mother. Now, Joan, the mother, Was it really a euro or was it a pound note? And final one, when I started running, I could just run for 1 minute. So I added on 1 more minute every time I went out. For big hills, I measured them in lampposts. I had to run to the first post and build up to the next and next until finally I got to the top of the hill. Only started in my late 40s and now I do 5K 3 times a week, including Castle Blaney Park Run when it's on. I've done the Dublin Marathon very slowly and lots of 10Ks. If I can run, anyone can, says Margaret. Thanks for that, Margaret. 51551 Ray at RTE.ie. Oh, it's getting excited now. It's getting excited now. Yeah. Thought we'd never get here. We're at the quarterfinal stage of the All-Ireland Quiz. Yes. Which means we're down to 8 contestants, 8 counties left. We did the draw earlier on. You can consult the draw on our website. By Thursday then, we'll have this phase complete. We're into the semi-finals Friday and Monday, and then the final. No, Tuesday. The final will be next Wednesday. If my calculations are correct. So we say hello again. It's Waterford takes on Kildare, and we say hello to Owen Jackson representing Waterford. How are you doing, Owen?
Hello, not too bad.
Good to talk to you again.
Yeah, the nerves are jangling here now.
Say again?
Big responsibility. Yeah. The nerves are jangling. Big responsibility representing Waterford here in the quarterfinals.
I always feel for teachers when I hear them on quizzes on the radio. No pressure on. Because, you know, we expect, the rest of us expect that you know things that we don't. Because you're a teacher.
The quarterfinals is good. Do you know what I mean? There's no pressure anymore as regards to that. You know, I came through two, so that's something.
Yeah, no,
anyway.
Well done. Yeah, no, you're good to get to the final 8 of 32. That's good. That's good going. That's good. You can hold your head up high when you eventually get back to school. Secondary school teacher, biology, maths, music and geography. The reason I'm telling people your subjects is that if there's a question on any of those, they'll expect you to get the answer. And if you don't, they'll be embarrassed for you.
It's true.
Yeah, so you're minding yourself and all that, and it doesn't look like the school's going to open before June.
Oh no,
it doesn't look.
Wouldn't
like that.
Think so. The leaving cert is looking dubious as well at this stage.
Is it?
Too, so we'll see. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Okay. You're up against Brian Leach, who's representing County Kildare. How are you doing, Brian?
How are you doing, Ray? Well.
Good. Say hello to Owen there.
How are you, Owen? How's things?
Hello, Brian. How's the crack?
And best of luck.
Brian,
same to yourself.
Brian, I saw one of your colleagues out delivering yesterday. It's like Christmas.
It's crazy. It's worse than Christmas. It's just so many parcels at the moment to deliver. You know what I mean? You need to get more vans now, you this bitch.
Yeah. And did you work yesterday? Are some of your colleagues working on Sundays?
Well, no, I didn't work yesterday anyway. I had to try and get a bit of sleep and rest.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? But they could have been out, all right.
Yeah, they could have, right, okay. How's your daughter? We didn't speak about the last time. She broke a vertebrae in her back playing rugby a few weeks ago. How is she?
Yeah, well, we rang the hospital and see the outpatients are off at the moment, so she's got the body brace on for another 5 weeks.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's such a bad break or whatever, you know.
Yeah. But she would have been in it for 5 weeks anyway, even without the coronavirus.
Oh, yeah. Right, okay. Yeah, so yeah, it's okay. A serious outbreak,
and
I know, but
Well, we wish her well. We wish her well. Okay, quarterfinal stage, lads, and you've chosen different songs to motivate you, I believe. Okay, so for you, Owen Jackson, representing Waterford, it's this one.
Hurrah for Derek McGrath, he sidekicked out the man with his cap on face and backwards gun. We win it. Yes, we can. Up the day, up the day, we're on the road to Croker to bring McCarthy home. And when we're in the stands, every woman, child and man will hear the Daisha roar. Can we win it? Yes, we can! Up the Daisha!
On the Daisha! Can he win it? Yes, he can! There you go. Wow, that's rebel rousing stuff. Phone Jackson, yeah. And to match that, Brian Leach chose this.
They was riding across the corral, nice and slow. The guards pulled in behind.
Oh, Christy.
God, man, up the lily white.
Oh, Christy.
Nice and buck, just me luck. I hit the nitro hard. Be the time the squad hit Brookett's Cross, I had her parked in Brady's yard. Oh, a little hundred and 50. She's rapid and she's nifty. She'll do 150 on a windy day. 50. Hit the nitro and she'll shift me. She'll get me away from the garden.
Kildare's most famous man, Christy Moore, and Honda 50. Now, gentlemen, because we're into the quarterfinals, I've been asked by the scrutineers of the All-Ireland quiz that you would deliver your answers as quickly as possible.
Mm.
We had suspicions that somebody, I'm not saying either of you would have done that, but some people were using the help of Mr. Google. So we don't want that. So if you could give us the answers as quickly as possible. And good luck to you both. Owen Jackson from Waterford, Brian Leach from Kildare. Let's get some tension going. Here we go.
Yep.
Right, Owen, first question for you. How many points is a brown ball worth in snooker? 2, 3 or 4?
I think it's 4.
Is the correct answer.
Okay.
Brian, how many points is a blue ball worth in snooker? 5, 6 or 7? 5 is correct. Yeah, no Googling there for definite. Okay.
I'm a courier and I couldn't Google now.
Right. We have two audio questions each this time round. We're into the quarterfinals. So this is your first audio question. Owen Jackson, can you name this film?
Hey, what's this?
What's what?
Have you got soul? If so, the world's hardest working band is looking for you. Contact Jay Rabbit. Rednecks and Southsiders need not apply. Shit. World's hardest working band.
Can you name the film, Owen?
Yeah, The Commitment.
Yes, that was Colm Meaney. We spoke to him last week. Commitments is correct. Brian, can you name this film?
This is our army. To join it, do you give homage?
I give homage to Scotland. And this is your army. Why does it go?
We didn't come here to fight for them.
What film's that?
Braveheart.
It is Braveheart. A lot of it shot in County Kildare, as it happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. Owen, what planet in the solar system is named after the Roman god of wealth and agriculture?
Wealth and agriculture.
Yes.
Okay.
Need an answer?
Okay. I'll go with Saturn. I don't know.
Saturn is the correct answer, yes.
Oh, Jesus, brilliant.
Brilliant is right, good guess. Similar question for you, Brian Leach. What planet in the solar system was named after the Roman god of sea?
I don't know, Neptune.
Is the correct answer. The guesses are good today, lads. The guesses are good today. Back to the audio. Back to the audio, Owen. Can you name this former member of One Direction?
Yeah, I want you, baby, slow, slow hands. Like sweat dripping down my dirty laundry. No, no chance that I'm leaving here without you on me. I know, yeah, already.
Who's that?
Westmead's finest, Niall Horan.
It is Niall Horan. Well done. And Brian, can you name this member, former member of One Direction? Who's that?
Harry Styles.
Harry Styles is the correct answer. You're doing well, gentlemen. 4 each.
Yeah.
We're on to the final question. You can go for a goal question, which is more difficult, but gives you 3 points. Or you can go for a one-pointer, which is easier. But then, Owen, if you go for it, then Brian goes for a three-pointer, gets it right, he wins. This is a difficult decision for you to make, Owen. What's it going to be?
It is. I think it's probably best to do the three-pointer, you know, have to try it.
Okay, well, good luck with this. If you get it right, you put Brian under an awful lot of pressure.
Yeah.
If you get it wrong, all he has to do is go for the 1 point and get it right. Right, yeah. Good luck with this. For 3 points, which of these former US presidents was youngest when taking up office? So which of these former US presidents was youngest when taking up office?
Okay.
George W. Bush, Bill Clinton, Barack Obama or Jimmy Carter?
I'm going to go Obama on that.
It was Bill Clinton.
Ah, oh, Clinton.
By a year, yeah. Bill Clinton was 46, Barack Obama 47. Difficult question, a tricky one. You had to go for it. But you're still on 4. It's not over yet. Brian still has to answer a question correctly. And if he doesn't, we're into a tie-break situation.
Okay.
Brian, I think I know the answer to this, but are you going to go for
it? Try and stick it over the bar.
You just got a pointer,
one
yes,
pointer,
that's it.
Yeah.
That's a safe option. Okay, here it is for 1 point. Carbon dioxide gas makes up most of the Earth's atmosphere. True or false? carbon dioxide gas makes up most of the Earth's atmosphere. True or false?
Oh, just a guess now, right? I just go false.
You say false. It's the correct answer.
Owen knew that because really
there you go.
I'm sorry, Owen.
Well done, Owen. We're working on a prize. We'll have it sorted out by tomorrow.
No hassle.
People are hard to get on the phone, as you understand. But there will be something winging its way down to Waterford to you. Mind yourself, and well done on getting to the quarterfinals.
Ray,
could
I give a quick shout out to some of the people listening in?
Yeah.
So I say hello to the mother in Brownstown, also to Leanie, my niece, Kevin, my nephew, and Danny, Ellie, and the Baba in Clodagh House.
Right. You've done it.
Thanks very much.
It was great talking to you, Owen. Okay,
that's
mind yourself. Bye.
And all the best to Brian.
Yeah.
See you. Thanks, Owen.
Brian, you're into the semi-final of the All-Ireland Quiz.
You're proud of me, really.
I'm completely unbiased, obviously. I have to be. Yeah. I can't show my true lily-white colours. Well done, Brian. We'll talk to you.
I just want to say hello to a lot of people that listen from Barn Hall Rugby Club and all me relatives down from Mayo and Ireland. Everyone around, there was even customers on Friday said to me, Angela Riley and Alan Lee, she was asking me, was on the radio because she heard me on the thing on his delivering. So
You did well. We'll talk to you either Friday or Tuesday. Good luck. See you, Brian. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
5 on 5 on RadioRTE.ie. Could you say hello to Nana Collette in Dundalk, who's celebrating her birthday today? We're all looking forward to catching up on all the missed family celebrations soon. You and everybody else. We are Emer, Deirdre, Sinead and Fergal, our partners Barry, Zoran, Ollie and Marilyn, and all the grandchildren, Patrick, Sorka, Fiona, Nicola, Oliver and Lucas, all sending tons of love, and that's Emer. So happy birthday, Nana Collette. And I'd like to give a shout out to my auntie Martha Duff, who's listening to the show from Houston, Texas. Houston, we have a problem. I hope all the family are keeping well. From your nephew, Sean McCabe. How you doing, Martha? Now, Conor Pope joins us on the line, as he does every Monday. How are you, Conor?
I'm great, Ray, and yourself?
Good. How's all the family?
Good.
And are you out running?
We're still... do you know what? Myself and my two older girls go out running a few times a week, and it's a bit of crack. Now, we stay within our 2 kilometre radius.
Mm.
And then I'm very lucky that I have the Phoenix Park 500 metres from my front door. So that's an absolute godsend when it comes to getting a bit of exercise. And I love it. But we've been doing an awful lot more walks than runs, which I'm not sure how good that is for my actual health, but it's good for my mental health.
Yes, and it's better than nothing.
Absolutely.
No, it's great because, look, we've been on more family walks than we've ever been. And it's lovely and you get the chat and it's great. We're living through the biggest social experiment in our history. And today you were looking at our consumer behavior and how it's changing in the pandemic.
Yeah, and all of this, a lot of this stuff comes from Borbia because they've been carrying out this real-time research into how Irish consumers' attitudes and how Irish consumers' behavior has changed in the last 6 to 8 weeks. And an awful lot of research organizations, they look at sentiment and they look at what people say they're going to do. But this research actually looks at what people are doing. And I think that's what makes it so valid and so interesting. And it has shown this really big shift in how we as consumers approach almost every aspect of our lives. And like in a matter of weeks, we've become this slow down, fearful nation of bakers. And we're all experts on epidemiology and we're stuck in our homes and we're doing everything we can to try and give ourselves an edge in this battle against the invisible enemy. And an awful lot of the stuff that's come out of the Borbia research so far has been really interesting. Like we've moved, one of the first things that they noticed in the early stages of the crisis was people were moving away from proactive health management towards protective health management. Now, they're two phrases I'd never heard before in my life.
You have to explain them.
Proactive health management would see you buying stuff that you think will give you a reward at some point in the future. So it might be everything from a protein bar to a healthy milkshake, something that you hope might give you the body of a Greek goddess or god in the future. And people then started to shift very, very quickly to things that they thought would give them a health edge immediately. So I'm talking about things like there was a huge spike in the sales of orange juice and vitamin C, as people thought that maybe an increase in vitamin C would improve their immunity and would help them in the fight against coronavirus. Now, it's very important to say that it doesn't.
It doesn't. Like, you know, you no,
can drink,
it doesn't.
You can drink all the orange juice in the world,
yes,
and it's not going to stop you getting the virus if you're going to get the virus. But it was just more how people think about their health and how people think about their purchases. And also people were looking towards immune building products and immune anything that had immunity in it. People were buying more of them. And, right, you know, they were also searching for on Google. They were searching for food and immunity and all of these things to try and give themselves an edge. Now, as I say, it's not going to, you know, eating healthily is always a good idea. And you wouldn't want to say it's a bad idea ever. But you wouldn't want to be, you also wouldn't want to say that by eating X product or Y product, you're going to protect yourself, because that's not how it works.
It hasn't been proven scientifically.
Absolutely. Yeah. But it's a trend that people have spotted. Another trend, and all of your listeners will be familiar with this, has been a huge spike in comfort cooking as the lockdown was imposed and people were moving away from fast food and ready meals towards slower cooking. And they were making childhood recipes or things that they maybe would have remembered their parents cooking when they, you know, roast, you know. There was a lot more roasts and shepherd's pies and cottage pies and all of these things that people were doing basically because they had time for it. And because an awful lot more people were in their homes with their families, and food and the eating of food became the sole or the focal point for all entertainment.
And I suppose so that's why, even if you are working from home, if you had a 2 hour or a 3 hour commute before that, you now have those 2 hours or 3 hours to do whatever you want with, and people are choosing to cook.
That's exactly right. And also people are spending more time cooking. Now, there was a behavior and attitude survey carried out a couple of weeks back, and way more Irish people are spending more time cooking, but we're also eating with each other more frequently.
Yes.
You know, and one of the interesting things is, you know, the big thing of the politicians, you can tell someone who has their dinner in the middle of the day. An awful lot of people now are having much more lavish lunches. And I'd include my family in this,
right,
because, you know, gone are the days of eating a horrible sandwich from a sweaty plastic coffin that you bought in your local spa or Centra. Nowadays, people have more time at home at lunchtime. And it's an interesting thing to see people spending more time on food. Now, as you know, and we've probably talked about this before, Ray, it takes around 66 days to develop for a habit.
Yes. Yeah.
To develop a habit. Now, Lord knows, I don't think any of us want to be cocooned or locked down for 66 days. So it's unclear if that kind of thing is going to become a habit.
How many days are we at now? Do you know? We were trying to figure this out last night.
Well, I know I haven't been in the Irish Times office since, I think, the 12th of March.
Yeah.
So that's, 50 days nearly?
So it was the Thursday before St. Patrick's Day that they announced that the schools were closed. And I remember I spoke to you and you said lockdown. And it wasn't a total lockdown then. It was a sort of
It wasn't, no. And you were right.
I wasn't saying that for that reason.
I have thought about that conversation a couple of times.
Right.
And we are, particularly as more measures were unveiled, I was like, oh, hang on a second, maybe this is what I meant. But another thing that have come out from the Board BIA stuff that I think is really interesting is we started to make more irrational choices. And this is global. I mean, this is not just in Ireland. So people started to search, like in the early stages, people were eating less Chinese food and less Italian food, even though it makes absolutely no sense.
Yes, yeah.
And my favorite one was a statistic from the United States, which showed that the 40% of beer drinkers said that they would not drink Corona beer under any circumstances at the moment.
look at what the president said last week. Is it any surprise?
Oh, listen, I know. But what we have seen in Ireland is this desire to stay safe. And what that's seen is people are asking questions that even 6 weeks ago would have been absolutely outlandish. Things like, do we wash our fruit and vegetables in soap and water? Should we sanitize our tins of beans? Do we need to leave our grocery shopping in quarantine for 3 days before we decant it? All of these things have become really manifest according to that Board BIA survey.
And what about online? Because we're running out of time here. It's going to accelerate the digitization of shopping, isn't it?
Online shopping has exploded. And in the past, it was basically only Super Value or Tesco were in the online grocery space in Ireland. Now you have everything from my local greengrocer in Stonybatter to all the cheesemakers in the west of Ireland are all doing online deliveries. And it's going to accelerate that because people want to shop online. And there's companies called, like a company called Stuff You Need, that have been set up specifically to cater for that demand for online shopping. in Ireland. And that's going to create this, and this is going to terrify you, right? Yeah. It's going to create a much greater volume of data that people who specialize in artificial intelligence will be able to manipulate and use. And finally, we might get to that stage where our fridge will be able to tell us exactly when we've run out of milk and how much more milk we need to buy, because it'll know more about our online shopping habits. And it'll also be able to warn us against buying that extra tub of ice cream, because it might say, you know what, Ray, you've had 3 tubs of ice cream this week already. Do you want to buy another one?
Yeah, they'll also be selling my information onto advertisers so they can target me with ads that I don't want to see. Anyway, that's another day's chat. So it's fascinating. And when we, you know, there'll be numerous books written about this, and one of them will be how it accelerated people's online shopping. Connor, thanks so much. We'll talk to you soon. Mind yourself.
Take
stay
care,
safe.
Right.
Bye now.
You
That's
too.
Connor
Bye.
Pope, who writes regularly for the Irish Times. And you can see the article about what he talks about there online right now. Mary Wilson is on the way. We are back tomorrow at, I'm looking for something there. Oh yeah, we're back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Till then, stay safe and mind yourselves.